We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back again on the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and for quite a long time has been here once a month on a Tuesday to answer questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Could be ornamentals, trees, shrubs, lawn, flowers, vegetables, maybe people have questions about houseplants. Any and all of that, certainly fine. Perhaps there is some kind of a problem that's you're still trying to deal with or not really quite sure how to deal with from this season. And I'm sure that there are people who are already thinking about what they're wanting to plant next year. So maybe you're thinking that far ahead. So any and all of that is certainly fine. You have a question here. I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. So at any point here, if you have questions, you give us a call. Hey, thanks very much for being here.
Hey, good morning.
We were just sitting here, Sandy and I were just sitting here talking about how when it comes to the weather, you just now, any day, you know, you get up, you just don't know what it's going to be doing. You can't really quite depend, at least here this last year, we've had a strange year, way off the averages. Now it's cooler than average. I think the summer was a little cooler than average, and we had some big-time rain events where we get a ton of rain in a very short period of time, and then we go long periods of time and really not get any. It's been really screwy, and for gardeners, it just adds to the challenge.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, I think the nice thing, the silver cloud to all that. I mean, the silver lining to this cloud.
silver cloud?
I don't know. Whatever. Maybe we'll start all over again. Is it, you know, some plants actually liked this weather. So people may have found that some of the plants actually did a lot better. I mean, for some things like tomatoes and some of those plants that truly like warm temperatures, they weren't all that excited about this kind of weather that we had. But, you know, we had a number of plants that actually just looked beautiful the whole season. So, you know, you kind of... Some plants enjoyed it.
Yeah, okay. And so when is the average date for the first frost? Are we around there?
Well, yeah, usually mid-October. It's usually October 15th to the 20th, depending on where you live in Illinois, but usually somewhere in there. So mid-October.
Okay, so we're getting close to pretty much being the end of the growing season.
Yeah, and we typically would. Now, where I live, we actually got a frost Friday night, Saturday morning. It actually frosted it was just a light frost, but that was, you know, a week or so early for sure.
Yeah, so. Okay. Well, we have some callers here. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll-free 800-222-9455 is the toll-free, so it would be a long-distance call. Use that one. Either way, you can give us a call, and we've got several people here ready to go. We'll start with a caller in Tazewell County, line one, right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have two beds that need to have their bulbs and rhizomes spread out. One's an iris bed, and the other bed is a combination of grape hyacinth, daffodils, and tulips. Of course, the grape hyacinth have come up with their little green, you know, leaves. And I'm wondering, when is the best time to go ahead and dig those up and replant?
Well, as far as the grape hyacinths and daffodils and tulips and all those things, this is a great time to do that. The worst part is that you can't, you think you know where they are, but you're never quite sure. So, you know, it's just really hard. The grape hyacinths obviously are showing where they are, but this is a good time to do that. If you want to go ahead and dig things up, divide them, replant them, that's fine. Normally with bearded irises, we usually say to do that like in July and August, right after they flower. And the big problem with those is the fact that those great big rhizomes, they have a tendency to rot. And so if we do it when it's kind of cold and wet, sometimes there's more of a tendency for those things to rot. Now, if you have a bunch of them, which normally we often do, you know, if a few of them rot, it may not be a big issue for you. But just to realize it's not ideal for irises. I've certainly done it, but it's not ideal for them.
Okay, so do the daffodils, tulips, and grape hyacinths now, and save the iris till next July.
Yeah, if you can, sure, that'd be great.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Very good. Let's go next to someone in. This is someone in Champaign, and it's line number two. Hello.
Yes. I want to know if there's any way I can save my hemlock trees.
Save them? As yes. In what's wrong with them?
They're dropping needles like crazy. The tips are yellow. Mm-hmm. And I saw on a PBS show that lots of hemlocks are dying right now, and I think mine are dying. I have some bare branches.
Yeah, it might be not the same issue as what may be on PBS. There are certain parts of the country that are having some big insect problems on hemlocks. I'm not sure that that's really reached our area. So there could be any number of things. So probably the best thing is, are you here in Champaign? Or
yes, uh-huh.
Okay. You might want to bring in a sample of something that's not completely defoliated, but something maybe is kind of on its way out. And we can see if maybe, you know, they've had anything from spider mites to you name it. There's certainly some issues that they might get. They're pretty tolerant of shade, pretty tolerant of wet, but if it's super wet, they don't necessarily like that.
Yeah, these trees are about 50 years old, so...
Well, but we've certainly had some particularly wet years over the past couple of years. So, you know, even with older trees, sometimes they can certainly have issues. But the first thing would be might to get a sample, kind of take a look at it, see if there's anything, and see if you see anything as you look at those needles, if you can see actually any signs of any sort of insects or, you know, anything along those lines, and maybe we can get a better idea what's going on with them.
Where do you bring them into?
You can bring them to the local extension office, and here in Champaign County, it's 801 North Country Fair Drive. It's on the west side of Champaign, just a block west of Mattis Avenue.
Okay.
And for other folks, if they want to check with their local extension office, generally in Illinois, it's listed under University of Illinois, or it's listed under the county name in their phone books.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Very good. And another caller here, someone in Wilmette on our line four. Hello.
Hi. My garden this summer, the tomatoes got tomato blight, and it spread to some of the squash, and I'm wondering what I need to do. Will that recur? Do I need to do something to the garden for next year so it doesn't come back?
Yeah. This year was a plant pathologist dream. If there was going to be a disease, it happened this year because it was cool, it was moist for long periods of time, and most of the diseases absolutely loved them. Now, you probably actually saw a couple of different, they probably happened at the same time, but you're probably looking at a couple different diseases on the tomatoes and something a little bit different on some of the viney type crops. But the big thing is just good sanitation, getting all those dead leaves, dead vines, getting all that cleaned up and getting it out of there is going to be real important, because especially a lot of the fungal type things that we have will actually hang out on those leaves and reinfect next year. So you want to make sure just good sanitation for now. You know, just depending on what the weather's going to be next year, you know, we just don't always know if it's going to be that bad. Tomatoes often get some leaf spot diseases. So the big thing, I think, in those is making sure you have good air circulation, not cramming tomatoes so close together that they don't have good air all the way around them, even once they get bigger. And that's one thing that I did. Instead of putting, you know, 8 plants in one spot, now I've been putting 4, and I've had a lot less disease problems. So just giving them more space, I think, is helpful, too.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. This is our monthly lawn and garden care show. So if you have questions, you can give us a call. Just that last thing you said, I'm more and more starting to think that that's important, that one thing you really should think about is not crowding stuff making sure that you get good air circulation around and through the plants, because especially if you get into a situation like we've just had where you have periods where it's really, really wet and stuff just never seems to dry out, that's just an invitation to disease problems.
Absolutely. And we know, especially some crops, especially, you know, everybody grows tomatoes, but yet tomatoes get a number of leaf spot diseases. It's very common for them to get these, but it's certainly worse when we have these kind of issues where it just never dries out, as you say. And most of the fungi that we have that cause some of the disease issues, they have to have that sort of free moisture on the leaves. Uh-huh. And if there's no free moisture, then even though they might be there, they can't infect as well. So,
are there certain things where you would, though, say that you should not plant the same thing in the same spot again because the stuff, yeah. because the problem's actually going to be in the soil.
Right. There certainly are some, especially with tomatoes and peppers and that kind of, that family, mm-hmm. that tomato family, mm-hmm. Eggplants are all in that same family. They do get some wilt diseases, which is actually a fungal disease that gets inside the plant itself. And those look different in that the plant, the whole plant tends, maybe one side of it tends to turn yellow and then the leaves kind of fall off and do the whole thing. And you don't see the spots. If you actually look at the leaves, it kind of looks like the same kind of thing. But if you look at the leaves and you're actually seeing spots, individual spots, then you don't have one of the diseases such as verticillium and fusarium, which are those really bad diseases that we would mention that absolutely you want to make sure you rotate your crops. Yeah. So part of it depends on the issue of what disease it is. The other part is for a lot of us, we just don't have a big enough garden where we can do that kind of thing and do the crop rotation. It's always a good idea if you can to rotate the crops, and at least between families, like the onion family, the broccoli, cauliflower, that family, you know, actually move those around periodically is a really good idea.
Okay. The calls here, we have several, and we'll start with someone in Mattoon and on line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, I have a question, Sandy.
Uh-huh.
Is it too late to transplant Japanese anemone? It's been blooming nicely, and I have a neighbor that wants a start. And I found two or three little start-like things, and I thought, well, I don't know whether we ought to wait till spring.
It's really, it gets a lot riskier at this point because normally what I say is that, it, you know, through the month of September, you know, as far as dividing perennials and stuff, I think it's fine. Once we start getting into October and we get these cold, wet soils for a lot of the plants, they don't like that.
They don't get a chance to set the roots down.
And they sit there and they just rot. So usually it's one of those things. If you're willing to risk it, that's fine. If you think, well, if it doesn't make it, I can get more in the spring or whatever, I think that's fine to try that. But if you can, I think it's better off to wait until spring.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
All right. Very good.
Bye.
And we'll go next to, we have a couple of Champagne callers. So next is line two, Champagne. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi. I first wanted to say thanks to Sandy because she gave me some good advice about our boxwood hedge and what we needed to do to try to save it.
Oh,
and,
good.
I think it's sort of coming back to life after this damp summer where the fungus kind of really hammered it.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I've got some tender little green leaves coming back, and the hammer of frost is going to fall on it. And I wanted her advice about these products that are some kind of waxy protection mm-hmm. that you spray on plants. Do you recommend those things? And if so, when and what do you think?
Yeah.
I'll hang up and listen on
sure.
the phone.
Thanks.
Okay.
Sure. I assume what he's talking about is that Wilt Proof is just one of the brand names, but these are antitranspirants. In other words, especially for young foliage and stuff, it has a tendency to lose a lot of moisture for the broadleaf evergreens, especially things like boxwood and azaleas and rhododendrons, anything that sort of hangs onto its leaves through the wintertime. And the winters can be really tough on them. A lot of wind, they lose a lot of moisture, and then you get this browning dieback. I think it's worth a try, especially if you know you have new foliage like this, or if it's a particularly young plant, and you just read the directions, and there's a timing on when you put them on and all that good stuff. I think it's worth it to go ahead and try, especially on young plants. If it's an older plant, you don't seem to have a lot of problems with it. I don't think I'd worry about it. But certainly on young plants or new transplants, something like that, you might think about using it.
Okay.
But it's generally for broadleaf evergreens or evergreens of some sort, something that hangs onto its leaves or needles over the winter.
Okay. Hope that helps. Let's go next to another Champagne caller. This is line three. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Sandy, I have a plant that we used to call it the Rose of Sharon. I'm not sure what they call it now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been in my yard for about 12 years and has a very substantial root system. It's gotten kind of really big around the bottom. This year, only about half the plant really bloomed. The rest looked almost dead, but a mm-hmm. few little leaves, but not substantial. And I'm just wondering, are we supposed to cut that back every year?
Yeah, I assume you're talking about the Rose of Sharon is certainly something that we would call it. Sometimes people call them hibiscus, but that's kind of confusing because there's a number. So I assume you're talking about the shrub, right?
Yeah.
Kind of the woody shrub.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's kind of the nature of the beast with Rose of Sharon. They tend to get kind of tall and leggy and not so pretty, and they just seem to be one of those that will do that periodically. Some of the spireas are the same way, where they just need this sort of rejuvenation every few years. And so absolutely what I would do, I probably wouldn't cut it back now, but certainly in the spring, I'd do a heavy prune on it, really cut it back. Okay. And you'll find that it'll send out new growth. It blooms on old wood and new wood both, so you'll still get flowers. It won't flower quite as early as it normally would, but you'll still get flowers. But that's the thing that I've noticed with those. They really do need periodically, you know, pruning back the Rose of Sharon. They'll just bloom better, look better, and be more lush.
When would you cut it back?
Normally, I'd probably do it around the 1st of April or so.
Okay, and how far from the ground?
I do a heavy prune. Off with their heads. I would think, I'm just thinking on the individual, usually you have like a main trunk, and then there's a bunch of branches coming off of the main trunk. Uh-huh. I don't know if this describes yours. I would leave at least probably three or four buds on that, those stems that are coming off the main trunk. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you leave in a few places for it to go ahead and sprout out of. So I'd leave a few of those. But you may be cutting it down to, you know, it might be 18 inches. Or so. I mean,
oh, okay.
From the ground, it might be fairly close to the ground.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I haven't done that ever. So,
go for it.
I will. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Let's talk with another Mattoon person here. Line number 4, the toll free line, right here. Hi.
Morning.
Yes.
I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
One, I got a little late on when I tuned in on the tomato plant situation, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering, should I spray my cages, the metal cages, when I take them off, because I had that problem with the tomatoes that you discussed earlier.
Right.
And the other question is, I put in 2 rows of garlic about 10 days ago, and should I wait till they pop up, which is what I've done in the past, before I put any leaves on them or mulch?
Yeah, as far as the garlic, I would wait until they pop up before you go ahead and, you know, give them a chance to send out some new roots, obviously, and actually send out a little bit of leaf. I think that'll be fine before you do that. They're pretty tough cold weather-wise. Then your other question about as far as cleaning things, I think it's always a good idea as far as the cages and stuff to, you know, and all you'd have to do is like a 10% bleach solution. I wouldn't worry about anything beyond that. But it's sanitation is always a good thing. Usually, if you get all the plant material off of it, you're getting rid of most of the fungus. But it's not a bad idea at all to do something.
What would you spray it with?
Just a 10% bleach solution, bleach solution, and then dilute it. And then just spray it down, and that's fine. That's usually just plenty. Or even like Lysol or some of those kind of cleaners, actually just fine.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, very good. And to, let's see, Fisher. Line 1. Hello.
And actually, before.
Oh, okay. Hold it. Yes.
I did want to mention that, just to sort of let him know, if you use bleach on metal, it will rust like crazy. So just so he knows
Okay.
I don't know if he realizes that, but it'll rust like crazy, so you want to put oil or something on it. Sorry, I wanted to finish that
okay. Yes,
statement
now.
As I thought about it. Okay, now.
Line 1, Fisher, go ahead.
Okay. Hi. I actually, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I actually have a question about hibiscus, the other kind, the big, with the great big platter size, plate size flowers. And I did successfully plant some in the transplant some in the spring,
mm-hmm.
Even though they're huge. But I'm wondering, I was wanting to do move some this fall. They have, of course, finished blooming. But I wonder if I need to cut them back, and I wonder if I should wait for those warm days this week. Will they take it a little better? Be less hard on them.
Yeah, so the hibiscus is really a tough common name because there's several plants and they all have kind of their own thing. But it sounds like you're talking about the perennial hibiscus, which gets these giant flowers on it and it grows kind of like peonies and stuff like that, right? You're talking about that one, not the tropical one, or
is a perennial.
Okay. So I think a couple things. I think we're getting kind of late here, to be honest with you. If it looked like the forecast was going to tell us that it was going to get in the 60s and it was going to warm up for us, then I might be more inclined to sort of risk, you know, actually dividing things and moving things this late in the season. It doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Oh, no. I thought I heard 70 almost.
70?
Okay.
Oh, really?
Well,
Well, I hope you're right.
That happens when they could, huh?
Yeah. There's just some concerns. Whenever you make divisions, especially you make divisions on things and you're cutting the plant material, and it, then there's a good chance or much better chance that that might rot.
Well, I won't do that.
Well, if you're just lifting them and just moving them that way, then you're probably much better off than actually dividing them like we would think of with peonies or something where you're actually cutting right through it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's a little less risky to move things, but my thought would be if you can wait, I would wait
till
next spring.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I have could I ask another question too?
Sure.
I know it's supposed to be hard to transplant prairie dock. I did bring some up in a seed bed from seed, and they're pretty big, maybe too big. Maybe I can't move them now. What do you say?
Well, it would be another one I'd probably wait till spring. And they really do have even the young plants on prairie dock, those prairie plants really send down. You'd be amazed on how big a root system is for such a tiny little plant. But if it's still a young plant, a little plant, then you can probably still move it next spring.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Well, just as a general kind of question, are we pretty much past the point now, if people were thinking about moving things, doing a lot of pruning, shaping, all that cutting back stuff? I mean, are we pretty much to the point where you just say, just wait till next year?
Yeah, I think personally, this is my opinion, obviously. I think we're pretty late here, and it's mainly because it's so wet, and it looks like it's going to stay cool for a while. If we had a better forecast, and maybe this lady was correct, maybe it does look like it's going to warm up later on, then I might feel a little bit better about taking the gamble.
Yeah.
That it's going to be good, to move things. But anytime you make that cut on a plant, there's always that chance that it could either die back or rot or whatever, depending on whether it's the roots or the stem. So generally, I'm not real big on doing stuff in October when we're having weather like this. Bulbs are certainly another case. Generally, through the month of October, if you've got daffodils and tulips and, those types of bulbs that you want to move around, generally, we're in pretty good shape for if you do it through the month of October. Most of the other things, as far as cutting them back, my rule of thumb is, whether it's butterfly bush or whatever it is, my rule of thumb is let it go dormant naturally. Just let it go dormant. Once the leaves have fallen off and it's dormant, then if you want to do some pruning, that's fine. Any major pruning, I'd wait till spring.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be 70 anytime soon. I'm here looking at...
it didn't look good last time I looked at it. It looked like the next week was going to be cold and wet.
Yes, I think so. According to our chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer, this is his forecast from earlier this morning. This is for Champaign-Urbana, but I would assume that basically for East Central Illinois, it's going to be pretty much like this. And he is calling for a chance of rain starting tonight, and then looking like we could have rain tonight, tomorrow night, Thursday, and Thursday night, and it's going to continue to be, on the cool side with high temperatures, maybe like between 47 and 50. So it looks like it's going to be essentially more of what we've had. It's going to be wet, and it's going to be cool, and I don't think probably it's going to be real pleasant for being out doing yard work.
Probably not. And I think it's the whole thing of how much you want to, if this is the time you have time or you need to move it for some reason, then and you're willing to gamble and risk it, then I'd say go for it. But, if it's something you can wait on, then I think you're better off waiting until spring.
Yeah, all right. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. 800-222-9455 for anybody else, if it would be a long-distance call. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month, always on Tuesday, to talk about lawn and garden care. We're about midway through, and we'll take as many questions as we can.
I did want to say, as far as trees and shrubs, I know we've been talking mainly about perennials, as in herbaceous-type perennials, but trees and shrubs are another story. If you wanted, certainly, it's not too late to plant those. So if you want to plant trees and shrubs, certainly through the month of October, I think you're fine on that. And the nice thing is, a lot of times this time of year, you get some pretty good deals on them. So I wouldn't hesitate to go ahead and plant trees and shrubs, those kind of things. But as far as herbaceous perennials and stuff, I'd probably wait.
Well, what about really woody, either tree shrubs, really woody plants,
right,
if you're thinking
right
about doing some trimming, some pruning, is that okay? Or would you say, just let it let it go.
Yeah, probably the biggest problem is that sometimes if you do, especially if you do heavy pruning, it actually, if it does warm up, it encourages new growth. And then you're into that point where it's just not, the new growth isn't hardy, and then you end up losing that new growth. And then the other part is the fact that, you know, when we have woody plants like that, you know, those stems are actually food reserves for them. So in any time you're cutting off the stems, you're actually removing food reserves as well. So that's why a lot of times we say, wait till spring. Let it figure out whether it needs those food reserves over the winter, and then come spring, then go ahead and prune them off, or, you know, see what dies back.
Next up, someone in Champaign County, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I have a hibiscus question, and I don't know what kind it is. A friend of mine wanted me to dig up a hibiscus out of her yard and save it and put it in my kind of cool sunroom. I looked up hibiscus under the category of non-perennial, of whatever mm-hmm. the opposite is called. I forget now. Annuals. And it says it's fine. I was wondering about how cool it is, but now I'm not sure. Generally, the big floppy-leaved ones are perennials.
Well, we've truly talked about all three hibiscus now between the different colors. And the one that I think you're probably talking about, there is a tropical hibiscus that people often get as a container plant or a house plant or whatever. And it has how you can kind of tell the difference is the leaves are very glossy on the tropical one, whereas the herbaceous perennial one tends to have kind of a dull leaf. It's not nearly as glossy. The leaves tend to be bigger. The flowers tend to be these huge dinner plate ones. Those are a description of the perennial one that you're going to plant out in the yard, and it's fine. If you have one that's real woody and has this bright, shiny leaves and has more of that tubular-looking, what we think of as hibiscus flower, then that's probably the tropical one, and it will not make it through the winter. It's a tender perennial, and around here it won't make it through the winter. And that kind of sounds like what you have, maybe.
Sort of on a general point, then, what kind of category of plants are, you know, good to bring in if we want to try and
right.
give them a little longer life in the inside. And I just, if it's a tropical one, I suppose I need to have a warmer sunroom for it than I currently have, which is on my agenda as well. But
well,
okay. I guess that's enough. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think probably a lot of people are maybe thinking about these things. So the tropical hibiscus, anything we might consider as kind of a house plant, whether it's maybe, you know, Boston ferns or maybe it's palms or any of those that we might typically think of as a house plant, those are ones that are not going to tolerate our winters. They can take probably down to 40, 45, but beyond that, then you start seeing some damage on them. But I will say, I have some hibiscus that I've been taking indoors, and they're huge. They're like 8 feet tall. They're just gigantic. I can't hardly get them in the house. But what I do is I actually put them in the basement, and I put them under fluorescent lights, shop lights, fluorescent lights for about 16 hours or so. And they drop all their leaves. They look horrible. They just look terrible. But they hang out all winter long with just a few leaves. I know this doesn't sound all that exciting, but I just don't have quite enough light down there for them, so they're not very happy. But then come spring, I bring them out. They become lush and luxuriant, and they're fine. So people may find that some of these plants, you don't have the ideal spot for them, like a greenhouse or sunroom or whatever. But sometimes you can actually bring them into these areas and just sort of do the just please don't die kind of method, as you're just sort of letting them sort of hang out for a while. And I do that with banana plants. That's another one that I do that with, and they look horrible, but you know, they hang out, and then come spring, they're happy again.
So. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I'm sure we've talked about this before, that people really have to keep in mind if they're going to bring something inside, is that it might, to you, inside might seem sunny and light enough.
Yeah, right,
but there's a huge difference in the light level for the plant between being outside and then coming inside the house.
Absolutely.
And it seems to me that's a big issue. Wherever you put it inside the house, and inside air during the wintertime is really dry, so that might be an issue. But you also have to make sure that the plant's going to get enough light.
Right, right. Otherwise, they will tell you they're not getting enough light, as in they'll drop all their leaves. Mm-hmm. But don't give up on them. You know, if they still seem like, you know, there's green underneath the stems or whatever, I wouldn't give up on them. Now, if they're just driving you crazy because they look horrible, then that's another issue. But they're in my basement, so I don't worry about them too much. So if you can sort of deal with them and decide you want to keep them, because the nice thing is they do get bigger every year, and they just look beautiful once you bring them out and all that kind of stuff. It's just, you just have to decide on whether that's an issue for you and you want to try and keep them. But
so after you give them this burst of artificial light, then after that you don't worry about providing them with light?
I give them, I actually keep the fluorescent lights through the winter time for about 16 hours. I have them on timer. I'm sorry, I'm not very clear on that. I am on a timer. So they do get some light for about 16 hours, these fluorescent lights. It's still not quite enough for something as tropical as hibiscus. They just don't seem, if I had a sunroom, then they probably would be just fine. I wouldn't lose all their leaves, but they have kind of an issue there. I keep them gently moist. I don't really water them a whole lot. So you're basically kind of letting them go into their own sort of dormancy. Mm-hmm. And then come springtime when it finally warms up, then I bring them back out again.
Okay. Well, let's go to somebody in Lovington here, line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've got a treated deck, and I'd like to have some vines grow up on it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything, the deck's like, over 15 years old, and the vines seem to be repelled by the wood.
By the deck? Really?
Yeah, on the, the supports that go down into the ground.
Huh.
They will not attach to it. They attach to everything else, the side of the house and everything. I'm always ripping that off of that.
So,
but, yeah, the tendrils just, like, will not grow onto the wood on that deck.
Well, maybe it's too slick. What I wonder. It might be too slick. They kind of need a little bit of a rough surface, and believe it or not, even like the siding of your home is actually even rough enough for them to attach. But if it's real slick, like it's a painted or, you know, almost got a finish on it kind of thing, then I imagine that's probably why they're not attaching. I don't think it's probably the chemical. Most of the chemicals that we would use now for pressure treated lumber and stuff isn't going to really cause a big issue for the plants.
I have a feeling it may have been the chemicals we used then. I mean,
it could be.
They're 15 years old may be a little newer than that.
Yeah, some of the older, like Penta and a few that used to be, and creosote and some of those that used to be used way back when on as far as treating lumber certainly did cause issues with plants, but most of that new stuff isn't an issue. So what I would wonder about is, have you ever considered maybe putting something around the, you've got them going up the supports normally, or?
Well, I haven't got them growing up anywhere. I guess I was wondering what might look good, if you'd have some suggestions for that.
This is full sun, I take it, or?
Yeah, full on the south side.
Yeah, if you can keep it moist enough, actually a lot of the, if you can keep the root zone moist, actually the clematis or clematis are pretty good. Sweet Autumn is one that you can't hardly kill, and that's that one that blooms. Actually, mine just got finished blooming. It bloomed like all September and October and has a little white flower, and you can't hardly kill the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really nice one. It does very well on those south side, areas that might be particularly hot for maybe some of the other plants.
Well, could that be my problem, I wonder? Because I've got an ivy growing, and the ivy actually, when I'm talking about growing up the side of the house, it actually growing up the side of the house in the shade, and the legs are out in the sun.
Oh.
Would that be the problem there?
Well, it almost sounds like, usually with, like, I assume this is like English ivy or something along those lines?
Yeah.
Because the little triangular looking leaf.
Yeah, yeah. I think anybody would call it ivy kind of thing.
Okay.
It's one of those two.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. You know, it's a pretty tough plant. It does like those little hold fasts that it has. It does like a little rougher surface. It, you know, loves brick or anything like that that's got a little bit of a rough surface. So I wonder if that's not part of the problem. You may have to train it, and that's why I wondered if sometimes you can actually sort of, you know, even put just a little bit of chicken wire or something to sort of get them started up a pole or something along those lines. Sometimes that really helps.
I've tried that.
Not working.
Where the woods.
It just doesn't like that.
Maybe I'll just beat the wood up with a hammer.
Oh, there you go. I don't know. No, I was thinking, you know, if you could even sand it a little bit in certain spots, some way to sort of roughen it up and see if that doesn't help it to attach. Okay. But it sounds like, you know, maybe you need to either think about a different plant or give it some sort of structure to at least get it going up. Yeah, I'm not sure. Ivy usually grows anywhere, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
it's usually.
Like, I didn't plant this stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of inherited.
Well, then I had another question on tomatoes. Do they will they naturally vine to any material, or do they always need to be tied as they vine if you put them on a trellis type deal?
Yeah, tomatoes don't. Yeah, they don't really. They're not a typical vine. Even when we call them tomato vines, they're not a typical. They're more like sprawlers. They just kind of sprawl out, but they don't have like tendrils or, you know, anything where they would wrap around something. So you really have to train them, cage them, do something to keep them up off the ground. Otherwise, they'll just kind of sprawl all over the place.
Well, I was kind of envisioning kind of planting kind of a trellis deal and trying to trellis them up.
You certainly could do that with tomatoes. I mean, but you just have to work with them a little bit and make sure you have some structure for them. They're not going to do it on their own.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, very good. Let's see. We have another caller here back in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi. My name is John. I have an azalea in a pot. Azalea is about 2.5, 3 feet tall. It's a very healthy and beautiful plant. And the pot is pretty big. I don't know, maybe 5 gallon. No, probably like a 7 gallon pot or something like that. I heard just a couple callers ago, I guess it's okay for me to still plant that. And so my question about planting it would be, how much of our eastern Illinois wind this thing could take? And the second question is, if I just want to bring it in and not deal with planting it until the spring, do you have any suggestions for how I might keep it nicely over the winter?
I guess the one question I would have about the azalea, was this a florist-type azalea?
Yeah.
It is?
Yes, it is, and it has beautiful, it was covered in beautiful pink.
Yeah. The only problem is that those azaleas that are really good as florist azaleas aren't always hardy for our winters.
Uh-huh.
So you're taking a little bit of gamble on, I mean, if you want to try it, you certainly can, but I will tell you, often those don't make it through the winter. They're just not, you know, what makes a good florist azalea?
I think I bought it at, like, Menards or something.
Yeah. If it's got the foil on it, like we typically think of as floral-type things.
No, it was in a garden bucket, you know.
Okay, like a garden center type place kind of thing. Okay, well, then maybe it's a hardy one then for that. I think probably the big thing when it comes to azaleas and rhododendrons, you're absolutely right, they don't like our wind. So any place that you can put them, hopefully they're a little bit more protected from the wind. Most of the time our winds, although lately they've been out of the east, it seems like, but most of the time our winds are predominantly from the north and northwest. Usually those are the worst ones, but we certainly get plenty of east ones too, it seems like. So if you can put it in a protected spot, that's great. Often the east side of a home is actually pretty good because then they get actually late afternoon shade because they really don't like, in the summertime, they don't really like a lot of hot sun. So they're a little finicky, so it needs to be well-drained soil. You're going to decide you don't want to plant this at all by the time I get through this list.
Well, I have it in a protected courtyard, and it's doing great in the pot.
Okay.
I love the pot. So,
is there a place in this courtyard that you can go ahead and plant it? I mean, do you have a soil area in the courtyard? You might decide that's a perfect spot for them.
There is a perfect spot. Unfortunately, I think I have to be very careful about buried electricity in that perfect spot, which
that
is
would
why
probably
it
be
hasn't
important.
Been, which is why it hasn't been planted yet.
Right, right, right.
Can I keep the pot outside in the winter, or will that kill it?
Usually they need, in order to keep things potted outside, usually we just don't have big enough pots. And even with the size pot that you have, it usually just freezes and thaws too much and the roots end up dying. So it's usually not a good idea. Now, you can set the whole, what I have done is actually set the whole thing, pot and all, either into a pile of mulch or in my compost pile or something so that the pot itself is protected from doing this rapid freezing and thawing. And I certainly have done that. And you may decide maybe you just want to do that.
That's, you know, if you...
Yeah, if you don't want to actually go ahead and plant it. They do need, you know, these are you know, woody plants, so they do need a winter period. So you can't really just bring them inside and, you know, hope they do okay. They really do need that dormant winter period in order to bloom well. So you'd have to, if you brought it in, you need to put it in a spot where it's about 35 to 40, doesn't really freeze, again, because of the whole pot issue, unless you protect the pot somehow. Or protect the soil is really what you're protecting.
Right. But well-drained soil, that's kind of tricky around here, too.
It is. But if you plant them just a little high is what I generally do, just a few inches high, so you're actually planting on a mound, that helps immensely because then you're at least getting a little bit of water away from the crown of the plant. They do like acidic soil, so that's the other thing. So generally we'd want to plant them with some sulfur to help acidify the soil. So there's a few things you kind of need to keep in mind with azaleas and rhododendrons because our soil isn't quite what they want. So,
right. Okay.
Give you some ideas.
Yeah, I have a big horse manure pile.
Hey, there you go.
Way I could just bury it in my...
It'll probably stay nice and warm. It might want to grow the whole time in horse manure, but yeah.
It's too warm.
Yeah, you might want to find an area that's a little bit more decomposed. But
yeah. Right. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. Thank you. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care. And your questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Oakwood is next. Line 4. Hello.
Bottom line. Okay.
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. I've got a question about, hang on a minute. I got a question about bur oak trees.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to know if what causes the galls to be on them.
It's nature. oak trees, for some reason, I'm not sure anybody's ever explained to me. Oak trees get lots of different galls, and if people aren't familiar with these, often they're caused by either gnats or it's usually some kind of gnat or midge or something, and it actually just causes this growth. And for some reason, oak trees tend to get a lot of them.
Okay. All right. That's what I need to know.
Yeah.
Okay. And so is that something that's going to be unsightly? Is that really a problem
for
the
tree? It pretty much is just something that's odd. Like, you can't hardly find a shingle oak that doesn't have these stem galls on them. It seems to be one of those things. Now, sometimes when they get stem galls, you'll actually see it'll break off where that gall is, where that round thing is. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you'll get a little bit of, dieback here and there because the stems have fallen off. But most of the time, it's not an issue. Plus the fact there, it'd be really, really tough to try to control it anyway because you'd actually have to spray just as the insect is trying to lay its eggs, and the timing on that is all next to impossible, and it's not life-threatening, so we generally don't worry about it too much.
Okay. Are we past fall lawn fertilization time?
Yeah, believe it or not, no.
Really?
No. No, you actually can even do a winterizer even into November. So even mid-November, if you haven't put on a winterizer, you certainly can do that then. Usually the most important one is that Labor Day, that 1st of September. So it's the most important one if you were just going to do one. And also if, people do have a lot of weed issues within their lawn, actually for some of the perennial weeds, this is not a bad time to be doing any kind of herbicide application if you decide to want to go that route within your lawn. For a lot of the things that are perennial, like dandelions and creeping Charlie and a lot of those, that you can certainly do that in October.
Okay. Questions are welcome still. We have time for some others. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Is there anything in particular that you'd want to talk about?
Well, could I mention something that we have going on?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
October 31st, the last Saturday in October, Bill Vanderweit, who's a city forester with the City of Champaign, and myself are going to be doing the University Avenue Tree Walk. And it's always a fun thing from 9 to 12 or so. You can come out, and we start just a block east of Mattis Avenue. There on University Avenue, and it kind of highlights the plants that are on the University Avenue Tree Walk. And it's just a great time to see what trees you might think about for your own backyard. You'd be amazed, I think, once people get into this, you'd be truly amazed at how many different species are actually out there along our streets, and we just don't realize it. It's not all maples. So that's kind of the fun part of it, too. So
and I assume that you will be wearing a costume?
Well, of course. I'm trying to figure out how to do my favorite tree, so we'll have to my camo.
This is worth the price of admission, folks, to see Sandy dressed as her favorite tree.
You'll have to come out and see.
Dwarf maple.
Yeah. Hey, it sounds like a short joke.
No, never. I would never do such a thing. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Let's talk with someone in Danville. Line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi.
We just came back from a weekend in Asheville, North Carolina, and we went to the Biltmore Estate, and I saw bamboo growing there, and that surprised me. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, is it possible to grow bamboo around here?
Believe it or not, there actually are some what are called temperate zone bamboos that do grow around here. Depending on how tall you want, now some of them grow a little bit too well, so you always have to be a little bit careful on which ones are actually runners and actually do rhizomes. Chicago Botanic Garden did a really nice evaluation of bamboo as ground cover. Now those would be a little bit shorter maybe than what you're thinking of, but they really did a nice one on different bamboos that would do well even in the Chicago area. And if you go to the Chicago Botanic website, you can actually look at their evaluations of bamboo. And it might give you some ideas of which ones might do well if you decide you want to go that route. And they certainly talked about vigorousness and invasiveness and all those kinds of things, too. So, yeah, believe it or not, we always think of them as a tropical plant, but not necessarily the case. There actually is a native bamboo, believe it or not, to Illinois. So,
well, there is?
Yeah. Go figure.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. One of my neighbors has a bamboo growing in her backyard.
Oh, really?
And it's a really cool plant, and it is one of those that it's well-behaved because it has basically just stayed in a clump, mm-hmm. so it hasn't spread out. Right. But it is really tall. It must be 12 feet tall.
Yeah.
And so if you have the right spot for a plant like that, it's a really cool plant. Yeah. But I think you'd have to make sure that you have the right variety and that you got it in the right place.
Right, right. And the ones that are, say, they're like clump formers, or it's kind of like with ornamental grasses. If you sort of look and see which ones are form clumps as opposed to those that sort of run and have rhizomes and stuff.
Okay, let's see. Next, we will go to, let me see, Joliet, I believe. Yes, line four. Hello, hi.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hello. I have a question, please. This past spring, when doing our lawns, we had a professional company put in six 7-footer white pines, and we were told to keep them watered, and we did faithfully, pouring in lots of water, and they gained extra height, etc. But lately, even though we've been keeping them watered with the past month's drought, we've noticed that immediately they've begun to turn yellow and start dropping their needles. Now, now, not excessively, but enough so that it's giving me some concern because I have white pines and another piece of property in the state of Rhode Island. But here in Joliet, I wonder, how should I be very concerned and continue to water and water even though the needles are starting to fall? And the company said I shouldn't be concerned, even though they seemed under stress, but still, I'm wondering, could you give me some advice on that, please?
Well, the one thing about white pines is it depends on what needles are losing. If they're losing the interior needles, that's perfectly normal for white pines. They have a tendency to lose them all at once. They kind of go yellow or kind of goldish color, and then they drop them all in the fall. So it's very dramatic. But if you look at them, you'll see these are needles from probably 3 years ago. You know, they're farther into the interior of the plant, and that's perfect. Perfectly normal. White pines just do that. If it was actually needles on the new growth, stuff on the very end, then I'd be a lot more concerned. So you maybe just seeing just this fall needle drop for some reason, white pines are the ones that tend to do it the most dramatically out of any of them. As far as...
Well, actually...
I think we're getting additional.
Well, actually, I think we're getting you're correct.
Extra info.
It is mostly the interior needles falling, and so that's a relief to know that.
Yeah, that's perfectly normal white pines.
Yes.
The one thing, as far as watering, as long as the ground is not frozen, then it's still a good idea on young plants to go ahead and water them if we're not getting rain. Now, you're not going to be watering as often because it's cooler, but if you feel the soil and it feels dry, then I would go ahead and water it as long as it's not frozen. So you may be watering clear through, depending on, we're getting plenty of rain here, but you could invariably be watering clear into November if you truly were in a drought.
Joliet's had a very bad season of rain the last month, but I very much appreciate it.
Right.
Thank
just
you
don't,
much.
Right. And the big thing is don't overwater. That's, you certainly can do that, so don't overwater them.
Okay. Let's see. We'll talk next with someone in Onarga, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I had a question about caladium bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
Every year I'm having to buy new bulbs, and I tried to save them last year, and I was wondering if there's a way to store them.
So usually with caladiums or any of those, like cannas and all those guys, you want to dig them up before they go through a hard frost. If they get a little nip, that's fine, but you don't want them to go through a hard frost. Dig them up. What you're going to do is go ahead and let them dry a little bit if the soil is really wet on them. Generally, I go ahead and leave the dry soil on them so I don't clean them off completely, but I don't leave them with wet soil, if that makes sense. And then you want to put them in something like peat moss, sawdust, vermiculite, something that's going to help them hold on to some of that moisture, which I know sounds funny, but you want this sort of loose stuff around them and not heavy wet soil. And then the other big thing is you really need a cooler spot to keep them. Ideally, it'd be nice if it was around 45 to 50, but most of us don't have that space. But certainly, around 50, that'd be great. When you start getting warmer temperatures, then they have a tendency to expire over the wintertime. They just dry out too much.
I've got a crawl space that when we put an addition on, I didn't know how.
I don't know
what the temperature is.
If it doesn't freeze, you just don't want them to freeze.
It won't freeze in there.
Oh, okay. So that might be a perfect spot for them.
Could I ask another question?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the technical name is. I call it purple dome. It's a perennial that comes up, and it just gets all these little purple flowers.
There's an aster called purple dome.
That's what it is.
Uh-huh.
That's what is. Should I be cutting that down in the fall?
I just let those just die down natural. You know, once they die, they're probably at that point now where the flowers are kind of going on the wayside. But the only time I'd probably cut them down earlier is they do have a tendency to reseed themselves. Some of those asters do. And I kind of just let them do it. But just to realize that sometimes people remove the old flowers because they don't want them to reseed. But most of the perennials, whether it's whether it's daylilies or peonies or any of that stuff, I think the good rule of thumb is just let them die down natural. Let them go naturally yellow, brown, whatever, and then trim them back.
Well, I've been trimming stuff in the spring instead of, and I'm wondering
and
if
that's fine.
Not good.
No, you can wait till spring. I mean, that's really not a big issue. It's kind of whenever you have time. And over the winter, sometimes it's kind of nice. You know, a lot of times the seeds will provide some seeds for wildlife, those kind of things. So sometimes it's nice to leave some of that stuff on.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, we'll do at least one more, and that's someone in Mattoon here, line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank you. I really enjoy your show. Mm-hmm. I'm visiting my daughter in Mattoon, and she's purchased a home that has a lot of ornamental grass, about 4 foot by 10 foot, and it was about 6 foot tall when she first purchased the house, and we cut it to the ground, and now it's back up 2 feet in 60 days, and we need to get rid of it, and it's got rhizomes and roots underground. And we really would like to plant some nice sunflowers. It's on the south side of the house. How can I get rid of that? It's got a driveway on one side and a house on the other and a sidewalk on the other. So we do have some barriers, but I'm concerned about getting rid of it all.
Yeah. Do you have a backhoe?
I can borrow a tiller.
I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding.
No, I understand. I really, that's what I was telling her, is we needed a backhoe. But the most I can do is probably borrow a tiller.
Tiller is probably not going to help you all that much, to be honest with you.
Okay.
The reason, for some of those really big ornamental grasses, and I've tried to do this, they really have a very thick root system, and it's very difficult to dig them up. It can be done, but it's probably going to take an axe or something like that to really get through them if they've been there for any period of time. And that's going to be your best way to try to get rid of it, is actually to dig it out, but just to realize you're up for a bit of a chore there.
I realize that. It's not in clumps, though. It looks more like bamboo. It's not a bamboo because it still has the fronds at the top and it's independent. You know what I'm saying? It just completely, and it looks like small corn is what it really looks
like. Yeah, right. And there are a couple of ornamental grasses that kind of look that way. They almost look like miniature corn or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So digging them is going to be your best bet.
Okay. So, and how far down do we have to go?
You know, you'll find out real quick. They're actually not. Well, I shouldn't say that. Some of them actually can certainly be at least a foot and a half deep, at least.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. It's like digging out a shrub or something. It's or worse.
Right.
It's
okay.
All right. Good luck with
Thanks
that.
For the encouragement.
There we'll have to.
I appreciate your work.
Good luck.
We got to finish there. My apologies to one caller we can't take. You can call Sandy at her office or whoever is your local extension person. And next month, Sandy will be back. Sandy Mason's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Programs on WILL made possible in part by the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the incomparable Marvin Hamlisch and Michael Feinstein on October 25th. More information on this event is at KrannertCenter.com. We have to break for an update on the markets. We'll be back, so please stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. Let's go right to the pits in Kansas City and Chicago. In Kansas City, December wheat now trading at 5.11 and 3/4, up 3/4. March, 5.27 and a half, up 3/4. December wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade at 4.98, up 3 3/4. March, 5.20, up 6 3/4. December corn, 3.78 1/4, down 3. March, 3.90, down 3. May, 3.98, down 3. July, 4.02, down 5 3/4. September, 4.08 1/2, down 5 1/4. November crude oil is not trading at the moment. November ethanol, though, is at 188, down 2 cents. November RBOB, 181 7/10, up 1 8/10. November beans, 995 1/2, down 3 1/2. January, 996 1/2, down.